Welcome back, everybody, to season 4 of the Read Connected podcast. This season is all about connection, connection with others, connection with something outside of yourself, and the connections we make within ourselves. And today we have a special local guest, Mark Ravin. And the question I'm going to pose for today's episode is, do nice guys finish last? No, they do not. And we're going to have plenty of proof today from these amazing stories that Mark Ravin is going to share. So let me introduce who Mark Ravin is. Mark Ravin works for the Herb Chambers Mini Cooper dealership in Boston, Massachusetts, and he works in the service department. So my sister, my mother, and I, at some point in our lives, have all driven Mini Coopers throughout our lifetime, and we have been so blessed to come across Mark Ravin, who works in the service department. For all those who are listening right now, just think about your lifetime and think about all the people who have taken care of you, whether it's when you're getting your car serviced or any type of service industry where, you know, you're going to someone for help, right? And there's a problem and you need someone to help you with your problem. I mean, my job, my sister's job is, you know, people come to us with their challenges and their problems, and we show up for them, and we really value connection. Connection is such an important value that we hold in our jobs and our careers. It's one of the most important parts. And just before, Mark was saying, you know, connection is what makes his job so fulfilling. And I can tell you right now that, you know, who Mark is as a person is unbelievable in terms of how he treats his customers and how he takes care of them, how he's so present. He cares so much. He's just such a great, great guy. And we hope that these really meaningful, interesting stories, sometimes even funny stories that Mark's going to share today, is going to enlighten, you know, what leads someone to become someone like that. You know, how are these stories going to inform how Mark became who he is? Because, you know, sometimes you go through life and someone just stands out, and that person just, they you know, you hold them in your heart, you know, for one reason or another, because they're so special and how they make you feel. And when you go through life, you know, sometimes you realize that's maybe what life is all about. It's really having these important, meaningful, positive connections with people. And people who really show up with positivity towards you and are genuine and really care. So without further ado, we're going to introduce Mark Ravin today, and he's going to get into his story about who he is and how he got to where he is. There's going to be really interesting stories about career development for young people or even for parents to learn about, you know, what goes into building a career, understanding, you know, where you're going to fit into the working world and how do you find your footing? How do you navigate that, and his stories are going to really enlighten us today. So we are so happy to have Mark with us today.
Thank you, man. What an intro that was. I mean, I'm touched, man. You know, I've just always enjoyed working with you guys as well, just so you guys know that. I mean, I deal with a lot of people on a daily basis, and not everybody is as fun to deal with and as kind as your family's always been to me. So it goes both ways, and I appreciate it. But yeah, I mean, always loved cars. Cars have been one of those things I've always enjoyed, but people more than anything. I mean, since I was a kid, you know, my mom was always like, you were helping everybody in the neighborhood do anything, rake leaves, shovel the driveway. You just like to help. She's like, I met the majority of our neighbors because you helped them do something in their yard, because you helped the lady two doors down carry her groceries into the house. That's just, you know, I guess who I was. I mean, my mom was always, you know, take care of people, look out for people. You got to look out for each other. And we're here in this world together. I mean, what's the point in not taking care of each other, really? I mean, silly not to. I think more people need to look out for one another, regardless of who they are, even if they're not your friend. Just helping a random person feels really good at the end of the day, you know? But yeah, I mean, how I got into it, just started out, I was 18. Went to interview as a valet position at Herb Chambers, and yeah, the rest is history. But what a fun time. I mean, driving some of the coolest cars on the planet at 18. I think I got pulled over 5 times in the first 6 months of working there. you know, that's a different story, I guess. I have a lead foot, and that was probably the wrong car brand to work for, but luckily, I never made it back to my managers. I kept that off.
Is that like Ferris Bueller? The Ferris Bueller scenes?
They're like, you need to deliver this, you know, $140,000 card to P-Town. And I'm like, you know, how do you not take a car like that at 100 down the way? You know, so
can you share this story real quick of the first car that they suggested you needed to valet?
He's like, you drive stick, right? I mean, I was like, yeah, I've driven stick a couple times. And he's like, let's go. We're going to see how good you are. And they put me right into a Porsche Carrera, like 911. And the dealership's right on a major highway. And I'm sitting next to this guy shaking in my boots because I've never driven a Porsche. And he's like, here we go. This is it. And I'm like, he's like, make sure you give it a little gas. I was like, that's no problem for me. We got that. So it all went well in the end. I did not stall the car out. I made it back in one piece. And the guy was like, you're hired. And, you know, that was how I started. And I appreciate them giving me a chance. And I did the valet thing for like a year and a half. And they had a really veteran sales guy there that had been selling Benzes for like 45 years. And he had the craziest clientele. And he was just getting older. And he couldn't deliver all the cars and handle all the cars. So they were like, Mark, if you're okay with it, we'd like to move you to be Alan's personal assistant and just take care of all his deliveries, all of his, you know, anything he needs. And I was like, how can I not want to learn from like the master, right? This guy's like, this guy's not even allowed to take phone calls or floor traffic because he has too much business already.
Wow.
Like, so, you know, me and him got off real well. I mean, just this really nice guy, Alan. And I kind of learned a lot about customer service from him in general, just the way he treated his customers. It was like, you know, white glove like treatment. And it was like roses on the car when the customer would come to pick it up, a bow on the hood, whatever. He was excellent with every final touch. And then, basically when he retired, they were like, listen, there's a really new hip car line that's coming out in Boston that's called Mini Cooper. They're coming to the United States from England. And I think you're ready to kind of be on your own. And they're like, I was like, oh, cool. I'd love to do that. And they're like, well, you 5 days, you leave for San Francisco for training. And then when you get back, you'll be downtown on Comm Ave. So it was just this transition right to there. And 5 days in San Francisco driving minis on the track got me really amped up when I came back, you know. And we got to drive on Lombard Street with the minis on the Golden Gate Bridge. Like, it was crazy. And, you know, launching a new product that had just entered was nuts. I mean, I'm going on test drives in Boston with these people that are just complete fanatics. So they're yanking the e-brake on me, sliding the car around corners. Wow. I'm in the back seat of the car. I'm like, listen, this is my style, but at least tell me it's going to happen. I mean, I'm smashing my head off the window. I mean, it was fun. I mean, it was crazy. But the tricky part for me being at the time 20, you don't get paid until the car gets paid for. Mm. So the first batch of minis was 9 to 12 months to get a Cooper S, 6 to 8 months to get a Cooper. So I'm like 20, I'm starving for money and I'm waiting for all these cars to roll in and everything like that. And finally they rolled in and I'm like, yes, you know, this is finally happening. But it was interesting because the first 3 years on the Cooper S model, they didn't make an automatic. They were all stick. So it was a very specialized clientele. And that's why I ended up getting pulled over 5 times working there in the first year because the people would come in and be like, I want to go for a ride in one, but I can't drive stick. And I'm like, well, I'll take you, you know, and I'm showing them what it's all about. You know, I'm beating this thing senseless and they're loving it. And I'm getting pulled over left and right. Now, one of my quick fun stories about getting pulled over. So I get pulled over, cop pulls right behind me on the test drive. And, he's like, you know why I pulled you over? I was like, yeah, I came out of that corner like really fast. I was just trying to show this lady what the car's all about. She's trying to buy it and she doesn't drive standard. So I just wanted to kind of show her what it's all about. And he's like, well, I appreciate the honesty, but no, you have no license plate on the car.
Oh,
and
man.
I was like, well, I just gave myself away pretty bad. Huh? And he's like, that's okay. I didn't see it. So you're good. So, and he's like, who makes this thing? And I was like, BMW, it's a BMW product, whatever. And he's like, I have a 3 Series. This thing's really cool. And I was like, yeah, you should come by sometime. I mean, it's a lot of fun to drive. Like, whatever. So he's like, I'm going to follow you back to the dealership so you don't get pulled over again. And then I'll let you go from there. And then, you know, think nothing of it, wave to him, thank you so much for being so nice, whatever. A week goes by, he's in full uniform in my showroom. Me and him went for the craziest test drive. It was the best time ever. He was the nicest guy. I had him, so I sold him a car. I had him from like 03 until probably 6 years ago when he got rid of it and retired from the police. And that guy helped me out so many times. I mean, it was a funny story of how I met this guy getting pulled over to having a really good relationship for like a long time.
That's amazing. I was thinking when Jerry was doing the intro about do nice guys finish last, and I was just picturing you like driving really fast. So I was like, no chance Mark is ever gonna ever finish last in anything.
My mom was like, you've been so competitive since you ran your dad off the go-kart track the first time because you wanted to be first and spun him into the tires and wiped him out. I was like being first. I was like, Ma, if I'm in first place, there's nobody in front of me that can screw up and cause an accident. She's like, oh, that's the worst excuse you could possibly use. She doesn't like driving with me to this day, but I'm getting better now that I have a little kid in the car. I drive a lot differently with my little man in the car, but my girl's got a left foot too. I mean, you know, so it's but we're both on the same page.
That's great. Well, we'll get to that story in a minute, but I want to actually zoom in on that for a second because I have a similar experience with like going too fast, right? If I'm going too fast, I sometimes get a little bit nervous. But to your point about being first and nobody else can mess it up in front of you, like if I'm skiing or like skating or doing anything, if somebody's in front of me and like does something stupid, it makes me more nervous. Right, it makes me mess up. I wonder if that's part of like
your
experience.
Well, you have to avoid it. Me, I'm like, I can see every crack in the road. I can see if somebody's merging in. I got a view of everything. I'm like, first is the best place to be, you know? It's like,
all right, psychologist brother, is that a little bit of like us being like a little bit like wanting to be in control because we care so much about things going well? Because I think that's also an attribute of both of us that like we want things to go really well, so we want to be out first. And if we get it done well, like fast enough, nobody can mess that up for us.
True. No, I mean,
No, I'm blowing my own cover a little bit, but.
I love those stories.
Yeah.
For all the young people listening and parents, like what qualities do you think you had that kind of allowed these things to progress, right? Because you started as the valet, but you didn't even get, you know, the valet was a step in of itself. So what qualities do you think kind of allowed you to kind of get into this flow of your career developing over time?
Yeah, I mean, I've always like wanted to work. I was never really good in school. Like, I mean, it was just a very hard thing for me. I had a very tough attention span. I mean, you know, I guess you could say what ADHD poster child of just trying to figure out my way. Just just had to find the right thing. And I mean, that I feel like this job was perfect for it. I mean, I get pulled in 15 directions every hour. I mean, it's like, so it's perfect for that. But I mean, just one of those things with my family, my little brother, having Down syndrome, and basically growing up, we were, you know, we're about 5-6 years apart. And just, it was just a constant, you know, work with him. And I was home a lot. I mean, he was a miracle that he survived how he came out. But, we were always just really close, and I spent so much time with him, and it was more of a focus, I guess, to, you know, be with him and just make sure he was good. It was just a lot for my parents. And when my parents split up, I think I was around 14. It was just like, my focus was to take care of him and take care of my family and just be there for them. And my mom's like, I know, you know, you don't like school. It's not your thing. But you know, you've always been good with people and you work hard, and that's all that matters. I mean, as long as you keep focused and do the right thing and do right by people and be honest, you'll be fine. So she always knew that I wasn't going to go to college. My grandmother kind of helped put me in a private Catholic school because at that time of my life, maybe I was a little off the wall, middle school. And I really hated my family at that time for moving me to a school, and I lost all my friends and had to start over. And after a year, I was like, this is the best thing that really happened to me, because I found friends from like 15, 17 different towns and cities, and I made friends from everywhere. And, you know, it was really a regimented school, which I'm not saying my grades got much better or anything, but it just definitely gave me a little more focus. And once I made the hockey team my freshman year, it like gave me drive to want to do better and, you know, actually stay on the team and keep playing. But yeah, it was... I thanked them for that to this day, as though at that time I was completely angry about it. But I stayed in touch with all my original friends from town, but I grew up in Melrose, and I mean, I had those friends since, you know, kindergarten, elementary school. So to leave them, it was hard, and we had played hockey together our whole lives, and now I'm gone, and, you know, none of them. I barely saw any of them. So that was challenging, but, you know, stay focused. And like I said, once I got the job, it was just like, that was all I wanted to do was work. I've just always wanted to work. I had like a leaf raking business when I was like 12, a shoveling business when I was like 12, 13. I was just something I wanted to do. And my mom never got on me about going to college or anything. She's like, I know it's not for you. You try really hard. And I got to give my mom credit. Like, even when I was getting C's, she's like, hey, way to go. Like, you know, you studied your butt off for that test. And I mean, if that's the best you can do, that's the best you can do. If you weren't studying and you weren't trying, there'd be a problem. But I've seen you try. I've seen you put the effort in. And I mean, so that's the best you can do. That's the best you can do. It's just, I'm not a good reader. I'm not a good tester. I'm a slow reader.
Yeah.
It just comes natural, you know, for some people, not for me. So I would try my butt off.
Yeah. Well, I have to tell you, I see, I work with a lot of people who are in a very similar situation across the lifespan, right? Where they're like, I'm trying so hard. Why is it so hard for me to do this? Or I'm so good at all of these other things. Why is this so difficult? Or how can I be so intelligent and wise, but then not do well on tests, right? And it's like this really difficult conflict, right?
Whatever, multi-choice. Oof.
Oh, they're the worst. They're the worst. They're really difficult. And a lot of people just kind of beat themselves up over that in those experiences. A lot of people I work with too, especially. And I will say that like ADHD, it's interesting that you brought that up because that's my specialty too.
Yeah.
And in fact, I hate using that term because people who are diagnosed with ADHD, they have great attention spans on things that work well for them and that they're interested in.
Exactly. I could focus on the things I liked, but if you were trying to make me focus on algebra, like I'm like, listen, I ain't going to be a rocket scientist. I don't even know who uses algebra, honestly. Like, is it even a rocket scientist? I don't know. I mean, I'm like, what does X plus Y times this mean? I mean, I didn't care, but like geography, I loved it. History, I loved it. Like I could focus on those things and those things I did good in. I mean, it was,
I
wish they could teach you like towards what you want to
do.
But like, if you could, you know, this is what I'm good at and you could, but they, you have to take this. This is standard. This is standard. I'm like, but not everyone's cut that way. I mean, you know.
And how can, you know, do so well in the things that you're putting the right effort and the right processes towards and then do so poorly in other things? Yeah. Why should that define you as a whole, right?
Yeah.
Why should it be like, oh, these aren't good, but these are good? Just focus on the strengths. And I love that your mom was encouraging effort. That's so huge.
And my dad was like this math super genius. So like it was really hard for him to see me not do well in math because like he was just, you know, calculus, trigonometry, like super, super smart at math. And I mean, it just wasn't my thing. Like I was extremely good at geometry because it was visual. Like I could see it, you know, algebra, I was like, this is made up. I was just like, I just feel like they should be teaching at this point, you know, stuff like life. You know, like balancing a checkbook, you know, percentages, finance rates, APYs, stuff like that. Like these kids, they come out, they have no idea. And they're like supposed to what? Go rent an apartment. They don't even know what they're doing.
I know.
It's crazy to me. It's like they're lost. I mean, maybe the parents helped them with that. But the school, really, I feel like that should be part of school. You're teaching them stuff like, this is not necessary. I mean, unless they end up going for that specific thing and they're like, all right, now we can take advanced algebra or advanced calculus because you're going to use that in your position that you're going to college for or something, you know.
But, well, I think you'll appreciate this. Yeah. When I was in high school, I was president of my class. And one of the things that I had the opportunity to do was sit down with the administration and tell them what I think the school needs to do differently and better.
Cool.
And I had the opportunity. That was exactly what I said. I'm like, we need to learn how to change tires. We need to learn how to balance a checkbook. And we need to learn how to cook and care for ourselves and the things. I don't know if they took my advice over the years, but it's so important. And now in my role, when I work with schools and I work with educators, like that's what I'm promoting. These executive function skills, which are hard to navigate different things that don't make sense to you at first sight. Like those are the core skills that allow for you to do everything else.
The middle school stuff was better. I mean, in middle school, we had a sewing class. We had a cooking class. We had a wood shop. I mean, it was like, I learned so much from those. I mean, I love to cook and I'm not saying it's because of that, but I'm saying it gave me like, I wanted to go home and try stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and then I learned how to sew and people were like, you fixed that yourself. And I was like, I learned how to sew. I still feel like.
It's funny how people find that more impressive than like knowing how to do a math equation.
Yeah.
Nobody's like, wow. Wow, man, you can do that.
You fixed that shit yourself. I was like, man, what was I supposed to do? Take it somewhere?
Yeah. And look, everyone's different, right? Some people who are really good at math and like that's their path, right? People have different paths. And I want to give so much credit and love to your mom for believing in you.
My mom's the best when it comes to
all the moms just out the there. Support, any parent out there, right?
Because there was just no push. It was like, hey, I know you tried. She would be the one helping me study. We'd be doing flashcards. We'd be doing this. We'd be up all night. And, you know, I'd come home and I got a C and she'd give me a high five, you know, because she knew like I didn't fail. Like I could have easily failed. And I wasn't not putting in the time. You know, she'd kill me if I wasn't putting in the time, but I was putting in the time. I was trying really hard, and it just wasn't working for me. It wasn't natural for me.
You know, I think that's what real love is. You know, real love is not necessarily saying like, oh, don't worry about that, or just being passive. Real love is being caring, genuine, but also giving the push in the right way. And that's one of the best examples I have literally ever heard, you know, to say like, as long as you are focusing on this, you're being honest, you're trying, and we're going to work together. And all the other stuff is, that's just who you are. And, you know, some things are not going to come natural, and that's, and to accept you for who you are. Oh my God.
No, I mean, it was always a struggle with school. And, you know, as you get further into school and then you go from a middle school, like public, to a private Catholic, you know, Bishop Fenwick up in Peabody, I was like, what is all this? This is so much work. And I don't know, you know. So I struggled the first year really hard. And she's like, yeah, it's all right. You're going to take a little time to get used to it and so on. And I did get used to it. But, and I got a lot of help from a lot of teachers there that were just extremely, extremely nice. But yeah, I mean, in the end, I really liked it. And I made a lot of good friends there. And it was a lot of fun. That was a lot of fun.
Awesome. Yeah. I love the saying, you know, you don't always get what you want, but you often get what you need.
Yeah.
And I to your point, Jerry, this morning, my cousin's wife posted something and said, don't focus so much on the academics. Focus on your children being kind and empathetic and giving effort and all these things. I don't know who to give credit to because there was no author of it, but it resonated so deeply with me because a lot of people come to me being like, help my kid be better at school. I'm like, I want them to be better at life and feel good about their efforts at school is really the goal.
No, I mean,
and this is just epitomizing it.
Now
I'm so glad.
I'm experiencing that. So, because my stepkids, I met them when he was 5 and she was 12 and she's just got word the other day that she's going to be finishing Providence College summa cum laude.
Congratulations.
Which is unreal.
Amazing.
And then the 14-year-old is like me with school. Like, so it's crazy how me and him can relate because like he's got that same issue with stuff. And but I'd say he's smarter than me, but like he doesn't like it just the same way. And I'm like, listen, I know, like, I know you don't like it, but you kind of have to do it. So we got to put in a little more effort here, you know? And now he's really trying and he's doing really good, but it's just funny how we were just so alike in that aspect. And now I'm seeing like what I went through, like what he's going through in a different light because I went through it the same way. And it's like, we're almost the same person going through school. And he's like, Mark, I don't think I'm going to go to college. I'm like, dude, you just started middle school, like high school. You just started high school. And he's like, yeah, but like, you know, and I'm like, hey, well, that's fine. But if we're going to do that, we need to start focusing now on what that trade is going to be. Because when you want to be ready, when you come out to get right into it, you don't want downtime. Because if you have downtime, you might not do anything.
Totally.
You know? So, because a bunch of my friends have done extremely well coming right out of high school into a union job, or, you know, they're building some of these buildings in Boston right now, or they're on the tunnel when they're doing the tunnel project. I mean, it's a lot of work, but, you know, they'll probably be retired 15 years before I am.
Oh my gosh.
So I'm like, hey, if you want to do that, I'm not going to push you towards school. I mean, especially spending that much money on college and you not, you know, wanting to or enjoying it. Like, my stepdaughter always wanted to go to school. She's going to be spending an extra year for her master's. She's just the smartest, you know, greatest kid. I mean, couldn't ask for better stepkids in my life. And, you know, now we have a 2.5-year-old together and they're the biggest help with him. So it's great.
Well, it's amazing how you all found each other.
Oh, yeah. Right? Well, that's another story too.
But we'll go into that for a second. But I would be remiss if I didn't like zoom in a little bit to what you're talking about, because the other piece too is, you know, Jerry and I both sometimes have students who are in college who are like, I don't think this is what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
And they end up feeling really anxious and get depressed sometimes. And it's a huge expenditure of energy, of money, of resources to just get stuck.
And right? Without where a path, you can become self-destructive.
Oh, totally.
You know? Yeah, and you're burning a lot of money. I mean, it's a lot of money.
Absolutely. And there's this like inner struggle of like, oh, society's telling me this is what I'm supposed to do. And even in the government, the past, you know, 15 years have been pushing towards everybody going to college. And you know, I'm a huge advocate of education, don't get me wrong, but I'm also a big advocate of find the right education for what you need.
Yeah.
And I love the idea of apprenticeship and going into a trade. First of all, I think our country needs more people who have these skills because we're going into a segment of time where most people don't know how to do things, right? What we were talking about before.
Great opportunity to do it.
It's amazing. And I have a student that I'm working with who's at a trade school, and she's in high school, and she's loving it. You know, she gets to be hands-on every day. She's learning a trade. She's building skills that most adults don't have. And it's incredible. She's so excited to be a part of it. And, you know, I think that we need to, like, relax a little bit as a country, especially in a society, in just pushing everybody to fit into a box that most education systems are providing for students that are going through their motions. And to your stepson's point, like, high school is not actually set up for everybody. High school is set up for kids who are good at sitting down, following directions.
Definitely not
doing the work, regurgitating the information.
For a long period of time.
Yeah. His attention span is very short. And right. So was mine. I mean, I'm like, it's tricky. Enough of this.
It's tricky. But, and there's, like, there's pieces of it that are so powerful and so important. I'm not negating any of that.
Yeah, definitely.
And there are some schools that have figured it out and are doing really great things. But on the whole, you know, when kids have that thought, like, you did the exact right thing to have the conversation of, all right, if this is feeling this way, what could we do to, one, make it work because you have to get through it, and two, start to plan for what comes next? I think that's amazing.
Yeah, no, that's why I was like, I'm like, let me get in the door while I'm in high school. I was leaving, you know, high school whatever time you got out, and I'd get there at 3, work till 9, and, you know, just picking up stuff from all these amazing salespeople around me. I just learned a lot, and I did like the sales thing, but at the same time, like with Mini, like it was, you know, no offense to it, it was just brainless. I mean, people were ordering a Mini. Like, they weren't shopping another car.
Yeah.
They're like, here's what I built online. When can I get it? Thanks. Here's my $500. I felt like I was like, you know, it felt fairly useless to me. Like, I must have had that first year, I must have had like over 2,000 games of solitaire on that computer. I mean, I legitimately, you sit there. I mean, you just wait for someone to walk in the door. Yeah, what would you like? Yeah, I want to order one here. Give me $500. I'll see you in 9 months. Like, it was just so.
And it didn't have that connection piece.
Yeah, right. Because you've lost now 9 months, 6 months in, they're like, oh, tell that customer they can build one. So you call me, great news, your order's up and you can build a car, and then I'll see you in 3 months. And,
That's awesome.
It's like, here's your keys, here's your car, have a nice day. I didn't get to spend enough time with them.
What a terrible thing that is about the way society is with technology, that as much as we yearn for connection and convenience, sometimes the convenience is at the expense of connection.
Mm. Oh, yeah, no. And that's why, I was like, I feel like I'm not able to be what I want to be up here. So it just happened like crazy how it happened. But the guy that was in Mini service at the time, and my GM, who is still my GM, let him go without a replacement. And legitimately, the next day I like went downstairs and I was like, I want that job. Like, I'm done. Well, what about all the cars you have? Don't you have like so many cars coming in with your name on it? I was like, listen, whoever takes my seat, they can have all the cars and just split the commission with me. You know, she won't have to wait, you know, 6 to 8 months for the cars to come in. She'll get $150. I'll get $150. Everybody's happy. And I'll be sitting downstairs taking care of customers that I probably already sold a car to.
Yeah.
You know? And she was like, oh my God, I would love you to be in that position. And now the rest is history. So like, I did sales from March of 2002. And then I went down there like probably like June of 2003. And I've been down there ever since. I mean, it's such a better place in the essence of being able to help somebody out and build a long relationship with people. I mean, I probably have people that are on their 5th or 6th Mini that I've had since they were 18, 19 years old. And now they have kids. You know, and now those kids are getting ready to have a license. Like, it's a wild cycle. And I feel like in that time, I've been able to help people so much more than I could upstairs, you know?
I got to ask before we go into that. So what was that movie with Charlize Theron when they're in Italy and they're driving the Mini Coopers?
Oh, the Italian Job.
The Italian Job,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Austin Powers too had
Austin
Mini,
Powers.
So yeah. I was actually, that was funny. So the Italian Job, we had so many cars that had just been delivered and that movie came out. So we rented a whole entire movie theater and we invited all those people that had just picked up their cars. And we filled this movie theater with all people that just bought Minis.
Oh,
it was
wow.
a great idea until after the movie. All these people are trying to leave the parking lot like sideways, pulling the emergency brake, trying to reverse J-turn their car and spin it into a parking spot. I was like, oh no, we created a monster. You know, this is bad. You know, just don't drive it down a set of stairs, please. You know, like that is going to destroy the car. Don't think that what they did in that movie, they totaled 23 Minis making that movie.
Oh,
so.
my God.
Yeah, so I'm like, don't do that.
But after that movie, my mom got me a mini model because I was like, yes, I want that car. And eventually I ended up getting it.
It boosted sales like crazy, though. Like, people were coming in the next week, the next day, like, I want to drive one of those. And I was like, this is bad. This is really bad. So it was fun, but at the same time, it was a wild time. Yeah. That was a wild time. It was a good movie.
A good movie.
It was a remake from a 60s one that Michael Caine was the lead guy
in. Sick.
But they used
the
60s British minis in that movie. Yeah. Similar, just the technology looked cooler in this movie.
Oh, that's so awesome.
Yeah, but yeah, no, it's been a fun ride.
Very cool.
Yeah.
All right, now let's dive into like where you're at now, because you know, being in the service department, Jerry mentioned it in the intro, and I told you this earlier in the week. We've been in Boston 15 plus years, and out of all the people we've met, like, you genuinely are one of our favorite people that we've met in the city. Yeah, and it's, you know, it's really important. And when you think about connection, you think about customer service, it's not just about, you know, you have to have a sense of trust that you know people are going to do right by what you're asking them to do. But the way in which you create this bridge between your job and the people that you're working with and you're serving it's masterful.
It's really
important. It's really amazing.
I mean, especially in that business. Like, it's one of those things where you screw that person once, they'll lose that trust once, they're never coming back again. They'll never trust you again. Like, you. So it was like, I tried to explain that to all the mechanics too. You know, I was like, listen, we're going to sell what the car needs. I don't want to push stuff that is unnecessary. We want to keep these people here and happy. And it's a simple concept, but a lot of places, they'll just be like, here's the car, quote the farm.
Yeah.
And then like, you know, and then you'll never see them again. Yeah, they might've spent $3,000 that day, but they'll be like, I just got hosed. Never going back there again. So it was all about just helping people, because I went through it with my personal vehicle and got the worst service ever. And I must have tried 4 different dealerships and just praying that I would get good service. And I'm not asking for much. I'm not trying to be like overcritical. I'm just like, give me a human being, like not a robot, you know, that's going to be like, this is what your car needs. This is how much it costs. Like, it was really like, whatever. And I mean, I've just taking pride in just doing right by people, trying to help people with the cost. Because to be honest, unless you're coming to me for an oil change, the car's usually broken. I'm usually giving out bad news. You're usually not coming to me to say hi unless you just happen to be in the neighborhood and wanted a car wash. But
you probably do have a lot of people stopping in to say
hi. No, and that's great. And after all these years, I love when someone just pops by and I'm like, hey, everything okay? And they're like, yeah, I just wanted to say hello. I'm like, man, that's awesome. Thank you so much. And yeah, here's a cookie from the bakery. I'm like, oh man, this is my favorite cookie. Thank you. You know, and,
that's awesome.
But yeah, it's that's the best part. Like, I've built those relationships on trust and just being honest. And it's pretty simple. I mean, I feel like that's how it should work.
Yeah.
I just feel like it's not, because a lot of these companies they base your money on how much you can make off of a person.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm going to pay you more if each of your tickets has more on it or costs more. Now, they didn't do that to me, which is what gave me that leeway, where they were basically like, hey, we're going to adjust this because I know how your clientele is, how many years it is, so that doesn't affect you.
Mm.
And, you know, that was something that, you know, Herb put into play for me. And I couldn't be more thankful of that, because that allows me to help people the way I want to without it affecting my paycheck. My friends, when it used to be set up that way, were like, dude, you're discounting the heck out of that ticket. I mean, I'm like, yeah, I mean, I sleep better at night, whether it affects my pay or not. Like, I sleep better at night knowing that person got what they needed.
Yeah.
I'm not about taking that money from people. Now, maybe some people are like that. I mean, but I just wish the companies didn't make it that way, and then it wouldn't be that way. You could do what you needed to do correctly.
I love hearing you say that. I mean, our philosophy.
It's pretty simple.
Our philosophy is like, you care about the work you do. You're passionate about what you do. You do things to help people, and the money will come to take care of what you need to take
exactly
care of. You know, it's not like, it's not the money first. It's always, it's the relationship. It's the work. It's doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Mom always said honesty was the best policy. Yeah. Now, she said maybe I was always a little too honest with her. You know, she's like, maybe you didn't need to tell me that, but I appreciate that you did, you know. But, you know, she's like, some of those situations you had me pretty worried, but you're like, Ma, I'm good. Just don't worry about it. But, you know, it's one of those things, I've always taken pride in that. At the end of the day, I sleep better at the end of the night knowing that I did the right thing for somebody. If someone comes to me and is like, hey, I mean, it's $7,000 to fix this car. I mean, what should I do? I'm like, you should not fix it. you know, mm-hmm. and you should really get another car. I mean, this mm-hmm. is really not worth fixing at this point. And some would go, what are you doing, man? $7,000 you just threw away. I'm like, yeah, but in the end, that person's going to be a much happier person with a new car. And mm-hmm. we're going to still see them for 3 or 4 more years when their car's under warranty. So mm-hmm. you just made a friend for life, a customer for life. I mean, just by doing the right thing once. I mean, it's pretty simple. It's just, I don't know why people don't fall into that line. You know,
well, I will say I probably need a bigger car with my big dog, and I have not because we don't want to lose you.
The Countryman, even that's not big enough.
I know, oh, he's man. A big guy. I can't fit yeah. anything else but him in
just
it.
Just the whole back seat's down. The whole back make seat. A huge bed back there. Guy's having a good time. I mean, yeah, I've seen some wild stuff in minis. I've seen stuff that I never thought would fit in a mini. A 6'8" guy, like 350, looks like a lineman from the Patriots. I'm like, wow, man, that's unreal. He's like, yeah, I mean, people look at me funny when I get out of it. But I'm like, yeah, but hey,
it's
you're
bigger
in there,
than you
know?
Think. That's for sure.
It's deceivingly, you know, yeah. deceivingly big inside. Maybe not on the outside, but
yeah.
I mean, with my family, we used to do 3 kayaks, the whole family, the dog, and like all the gear from Maine in there. And
amazing.
I'd put all the stuff on the ground behind the car, and my buddy would go, what are you, like Mary Poppins? Like, where'd you put all that stuff, man? And I was like, you know, jigsaw, Tetris, but we yeah. make it work. But, yeah. you know, I mean, I'd have to pack the kayaks full of stuff, too. Anything yeah. that could get wet when in the kayaks.
Of course.
You know? I maxed that roof rack out. I'm sorry. We
had
fun.
Good move. Good move. Well, you know, you take pride in taking care of so many other people, and you shared a story about how your big boss recognize that and take care of you too. I wonder if we can give him a little
props.
Oh,
yeah, no, that was you know, something unexpected. I mean, I was having an issue with a manager at my work, and you know, they whatever they did to my pay plan affected me heavily, like, you know, a lot of money in the course of a year. And then I begged this guy to fix it, begged him to fix it. He wouldn't fix it. 6 more months went by, so now I've lost another bunch of money, and now I'm just getting really aggravated to the point where, yeah, I mean, I never thought I'd quit, but I quit. And our competition store, Minia Peabody, hired me like right away. So I was supposed to start like a week from then. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to take another week. I've been working here straight for God knows how long. I'm just going to take some time off. And I was fishing up in Newburyport, and I got a call directly from Herb Chambers. And he's like, hey, man, what is going on? I heard something happened, but I don't know the logistics. I mean, if anyone can fix it, it's me. You have time to sit with me. And I said, of course, I owe you that. You've been nothing but good to me. He's taken care of me for a long time at this point. It's got to be 16 or 17 years at this point when this happened. And he agreed to meet with me at his Mercedes Somerville store. And it came flying in the helicopter and landed. We chatted for like an hour. He legitimately fixed everything that had gone wrong, my paycheck, everything. And then, yeah, it was very unexpected, and then just flew off into the sunset again. And then I started working again Monday, and I think it was maybe a couple days after that, he popped in my office and was like, you good? And I was like, we're good. And he's like, good, thank you for coming back. And, you know, I guess with 2,500 employees, it was extremely shocking to me that he came out of left field like that. But he's like, Mark, I get so many letters about you in customer service. Like, I get more letters about you in a month than I get about some people in a year. And he's like, that's not customer service that I'm willing to lose from my company without a fight. And I mean, I just thought that was really crazy. I mean, Herb's one of those guys that will legitimately, if you send him an email or a letter, like, he will respond, which is nuts to me. Mm. I mean, I think he's 81 or so now, and he legitimately still works. He still responds to those emails. He still responds to letters. If someone sends him a letter, he photocopies the letter. He writes on the letter like a thank you note and sends it to me.
Oh, wow.
Like, it's pretty crazy in the essence of how busy that guy is with 62 or 63 dealerships at this point. So I felt big at that point and not little in this huge company.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool of him to do that.
Well, you represent the company, you know, like you.
No,
are,
no, and yeah. That's what he said. He's like, you've been with me forever. He's like, I've been stopped eating dinner for somebody to tell me how much they love you and love going to see you because you're there and stuff. And he's like, I appreciate that, you know, that you make me look good.
So, that's incredible. That's so good to hear.
No,
I don't know
I mean,
if that those stories get out.
Well, I mean, Herb's one of those guys who kind of, you know, came from nothing. I mean, so like he worked his way to the top. I mean, true American dream guy. I mean, he didn't finish high school, joined the Navy, came back, started just working his butt off and just worked his way to
amazing.
The top. I mean, got treated like absolute garbage when he was going to buy his first car at Cadillac. And like they, because, you know, the way he dressed or the way he came in, they thought he was just you know, a nobody, a tire kicker, and they just ignored him. And so when he left, came back, bought the dealership the next time he came back. Wow. That was his first dealership and his only dealership to this day that's out of Massachusetts. Huh. Yeah. And yeah, he just let everybody go and put his own team in place and then took off from there. And his whole thing was, you know, sales sells the first car, service sells every car from that point moving forward. Mm. It's like, all right, service is everything to me. So it was a... It was I respected that because I felt that that was true. I mean, I was just the order taker when I was in sales, and that's how I felt. Like somebody was just like, "Hey, this is what I want." And like service, I was helping people, and then they would get their next one so they could stake with me, and I appreciate that. Like that meant a lot to me to see someone on their sixth car, like they'd get one every 3 years or so, and like, yeah, you know, I have this car because I get to deal with you, and, yeah. And that just, yeah. Really hits home. Like it makes me feel really good about what I'm doing and that I'm doing the right thing. And that's what I always wanted to do.
And I just want to say real quick, all the people who've dealt with in the sales and people who got us set up with the car in the first place, they definitely have been excellent as well.
Oh no, yeah. I'm very happy with the guys I got in sales. I mean, I love my team. There's some other guy, one of the guys there that's been with me. He's got to be 18 years now together. And I mean, it's like a brother, you know? So he takes care of me. He knows when he sends somebody to me, I'm taking care of him. So it's really good. I mean, I've never seen in a dealership, it's usually a very heavy revolving door of changing people. And I've got techs that I've worked with for 22 years, 18 years, 16 years, 17 years. I mean, crazy. Salespeople, 18, 20 years. I mean, that's rare to find, you know. So you know that they're doing something right and Herb's taking care of people. And yeah, I mean, that's very uncommon.
It's really rare and it's so exceptional. And even, you know, the other day I was over at the dealership and you weren't there, but your other guy, Theo, was there.
No, I missed you by like 30 seconds.
30 seconds. I don't know how it was crazy.
You were driving too fast, Mark.
No, I went to pick up food on Harvard Ave and she must have came as I was walking back or something. I know.
No, yeah. But my point is like, you know, the nice part is that whether it's through your example or Herb's example or probably both, like you can leave. And you know that the team will do the same as you would for everybody else, which is amazing.
We're all on the same page. That's like, huge. We help people out big time. Theo, the guy that sits next to me from Barbados, like he's been great. It's got to be 16 years.
Wow.
Me and him actually have the same birthday.
No way.
Which is crazy because we sit 6 feet apart.
That's
and we
wild.
Have the same birthday. And then Sam, he's great too. Sam's like we great all too. Just get along really well. Yeah. And you're in a 15-foot office. It's kind of nice when you do. And then Matt, who transferred up to the shop to do dispatch, he worked with me for 13 years in that office and, you know, became one of my best friends. I mean, I was his best man in his wedding. I mean, our families are like intertwined at this point. And it's just like, yeah, I mean, you grow this bond. You're in this little office taking care of people for 12 hours a day. And
huge props
met some
to everybody.
Great people there. Like, I love the place I work. The place is extremely hard to work. There's no space. It's a challenging location. But the people that are there, like, make it happen. And I mean, that's all the reason I've stayed is, like, the people.
With all the changes that are going on with AI and, like, this lack of the service and, like, a lot of these brick and mortars closing down, I hope that we don't lose that. Yeah. From like industry and commerce, because that's the most important part. And
we're literally having a whole podcast episode about it. That's how important it is.
I know. It's so true. Yeah,
like,
it's
that
so
I'm
important.
I'm going to end up as an iPad on a chair.
Right.
Like, and talking from my house instead of actually being there to physically help the person. Like about it and joked about it. And I was like, it's probably not even a joke at this point. You know?
Oh, it's crazy. But I think it's
my
like.
My chair will spin around with my face on this iPad. Like, hi, how are you doing? You
know? Please, no, that's so creepy.
I know. I'm just kidding. I want to be there. I like to physically help. I like to physically do things.
But this is my like PSA for the moment is like for all of our audience members, like we value in-person connection. It's what I think is our greatest human gift to be able to do and have these experiences. And if we just kind of like let technology take over, we're in trouble. We're not going to get into that now. However, I do want to go back to the point you made of like your whole team being so great and feeling like a family, because your current family actually is an extension of the work that you do and your work family. So you got to tell that story.
Yeah. So Liz, who's now the manager in BMW, used to sit next to me in service. And a young lady came in and I mean, I didn't even know. Obviously, I found out after that she had asked Liz, you know, hey, is he single? And at the time I wasn't. And, you know, some time went by, her car broke down. and she came in and I was out of the office and she asked Liz, and I was single. And basically later on, as I was walking her out to the car to say goodbye, she's like, hey, can I take you to lunch for all you, you know, the help and whatnot and whatever. Yeah. I'm like, sounds great. And, you know, I didn't think much of it because, you know, she was wearing an engagement ring and we joke about it to this day, but yeah. So, okay. We go out to lunch, great conversation, great time, whatever. A couple months goes by, she comes in, she had dropped her ring into the track of the seat and I took the seat out, jumped the seat upside down, find her ring. And, you know, it was one of those things I found out later that she brought in the car once before, which was a completely lie just to see me. Like there was nothing broken on the car. She had just like brought it in and like pretended so she could take me out to lunch. So we went out to lunch again. And then at that point we exchanged numbers and I was like, hey, like, I'm sorry, but the wedding ring thing. And she's like, oh, I bought that to keep guys away. I mean, I'm not married. I'm like, how would I have ever known that? You know, first off, I would never ask a customer out. Second off, she, thank God, asked me out. And yeah, and then from that point, we went on another date and then another date. And on that date, I got to meet her kids. And yeah, I mean, just the rest is history. We've been together a little over 9 years. October will be 10 years. And then wow. November 7th, we get married. So we have a 2.5-year-old together. So
beautiful.
Crazy from owning a mini to, yeah. And
beautiful.
Totally wild.
For the women out there, shoot your shot. Pretty much, anybody out there.
I'm never
going to
ask a customer out. I mean, it's just one of those things, totally against policy, whatever. And then she's wearing a ring. Why would I ask her out? Yeah. She got a wedding ring on it. And it was a nice diamond that she had bought herself. Like, it wasn't like a regular ring and it was on the correct hand. And I'm like, all right, you know. So we joke about it to this day and
That's
whatnot.
Great.
She's like, I'll never forget that day I saw you. And I was looking at you through the garage door and I could just see you working. I was like, wow, you were like stalking me. And no. She's like, I told my mom that's going to be the person I'm with. And when I went home that night.
Oh, my God.
Oh. So, yeah. So I'm like, well, you called it. So, and I just couldn't be happier. Like her two kids, like we just blended really well together. I consider her kids my own at this point. I mean, they've been the best to me. They've really treated me like a dad. And I got to take my stepdaughter on all her college visits.
Nice.
I think I went to all but one. And but yeah, I mean, just the best. I'm so proud of her for the summa cum laude. I mean, I couldn't be more impressed with her. Yeah, I wish I was ever that good in school, but she's impressive. I mean, she dropped a class that was a B+ because it was going to affect the GPA too much to get the super. I'm like, you took that course for a year. You're just going to just drop it? I mean, she's like, yeah, I'm not letting that affect my. But she wants to, yeah, do. She's going to have to be an elementary school teacher.
Oh, bless her. Yeah, you'll have to connect her with me when she starts. But I think it's a testament to who you are. And if the audience can't already hear in your voice, he is glowing telling this story with a little bit of blushing going on in your face.
Because I mean, a different story. Like I really never thought of or planned to have kids. My last two girlfriends left me over that. Mm. And, you know, it was just never in my cards for me. I was like, and it's nothing against my brother or my family or stuff, but I always thought like I'd been a babysitter for a while. My brother is, you know, he's 34 now and he's really never aged, you know, past 7 or 8. So it's like, I've always been there to be that babysitter. I was like, do I really want to deal with this again? Mm-hmm. And then I started raising her son, you know, and Angelo, who's like the best kid. And he's like my fishing partner now.
Nice.
Like everything. And then Gabby, I mean, she was just easy. I mean, I'm like, my girl had already done such a good job with her. There was really nothing to do except just be there if she needed me and whatnot. And yeah, I mean, them having those two kids in my life, like changed my life so many ways and made me want to have a kid.
Yeah.
Thank God I did. I mean, I'm having the best time of my life right now.
Yeah.
Your little boy is there.
Oh, he's so blast. And the other two, I was worried about the age gap. I mean, they're such a big help and they're so close and he looks up to them so much. I mean, it's so much fun to watch, honestly. So,
well, I think that's another great transition into, you know, sharing a little bit about, I think, you know, one of my grad school friends who did her dissertation actually on siblings of individuals with disabilities found a lot of really beautiful evidence around that relationship and how important it is and how it shapes the trajectory of people's lives.
Oh, man. You know,
and sometimes
imagine.
Not always for great reasons.
Yeah.
Sometimes it doesn't always go in the right direction, but there's some really great evidence that it's a beautiful thing. And I think you also are a great example of that. I wonder if you could share a little bit about your relationship with your brother,
too. Yeah, I mean, my brother, like, pretty much probably shouldn't have lived. Like Children's Hospital saved his life. He was like 2.5, 3 months premature. He was like just under 2 pounds. Wow. His stomach had formed like all his intestines fully outside of his body.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Like he spent 4 months in Children's Hospital in an incubator.
Must've been so hard.
And I was going every day with my parents to the hospital, scrubbing in, going in, like touching them through, you know, the incubator. Like, yeah. It was just like we grew close like right away. I mean, it was one of those things. And somehow he came home and somehow he became healthy and just got big. And, you know, he's just always the sweetest kid. And I mean, I think a lot of people who know anyone with Down syndrome, they're just got the best hearts on the planet. Yeah. They got no discrimination. No, they don't see color. They don't see race. They don't see fat. They don't see skinny. They don't see anything except, is this person a good person or a bad person?
Yeah.
Are they nice to me? Then we're cool, you know?
Yeah.
And it allowed me to like completely change my approach on life. Or this kid would wake up with like 15 different medical issues in the morning and he was just the happiest guy, hug everybody, you know, shake his hand. No, I'm gonna hug you, you know?
Aww.
So he's just the sweetest kid. And it just basically made me like, you know, stop complaining about the stupid stuff and just throw it out the window and not sweat the small stuff. So it just totally changed my approach. Now, I'm not saying it happened when I was, you know, 5 or 6. Probably maybe 10 or 12, but, you know, I probably lost some friends at that point because those were those people that were, like, making fun of people with disabilities or making fun of somebody who they were different. And, you know, I'm like, that's my brother, dude. Like, if you're going to call somebody, you know, which is a word I hate to use, but you call somebody a retard, I'm like, then you're saying he's like my brother. What's wrong with that? Mm-hmm. Like, what's wrong with that? Like, he's better than you are. I mean, he's definitely a better person than you are for even saying that. So it's a word I always hated. You know, it's one of those things to this day, like somebody, anyone that knows me, they'll slip and say it and they'll be like, dude, I'm sorry. And I'm like, I know you didn't say it on purpose. Like, you know, it's just one of those things they know. And they all know my brother at this point. So, you know, and he's just come a long way.
I joke I'd rather have an F-bomb than the R-word.
Yeah. It bothers me. It totally bothers me. But yeah, I mean, and he found this program in Cambridge, which is what I do that fundraiser for every year, which is actually next weekend. We jump in the ocean
for the
Polar Plunge at Naha Beach, which I can't wait. This is my 23rd year jumping in the ocean.
Wow.
But we live in Melrose. This program is in Cambridge. It's called the Cambridge Program Friends. And this guy, David's like been running it since he was a kid. His older sister has autism. And he's just like, you know, Marine, you know, boxer, like very regimented guy. And he just fell into this role. And he does it so well. And he's got, I think the program's up to 90 kids now. And I don't know how he does it. But it's like completely changed my brother's life. Because most programs, they'll do stuff you think they should do. Now, David does life stuff. You know, we're going to cross the street. We're going to go in the store. We're going to buy something. And we're going to get change. We're not going to walk away and give him $10 and leave. You know, because some of these kids wouldn't even buy a $1.25 thing. Here's 10 bucks and leave.
Yeah,
like, they don't
even
think about it. And, you know, he's done, you know, you see a woman walking with bags, offer to help her. If not, at least hold the door for her. Like that stuff. Like, and just, I think that's reshaped my brother in so many ways. Because like, we need to teach him like, hey, look both ways when you cross the street and watch this walk sign. Make sure it actually says walk and isn't, you know. Mm-hmm. Because they don't think of that stuff. They're kind of younger brain in that aspect. And it's been the best program. I love David. I mean, the stuff he's done for those kids. I mean, this guy, some of these kids are in homes and don't have families that come visit. Like, he'll legitimately take these kids to his house for Thanksgiving.
Aww.
I mean, that's how dedicated to this program he is. And it's one of those things. He used to run the marathon for it. And then once he hurt his knee, I took this one and started. Because I'm like, I don't run marathons, buddy. That's all you. I'll jump in that ocean 15 times before I run a marathon once. Not even a half marathon. So he's jumped in a couple times with me. But this year, I think because so many people have latched on to my fundraiser, like I think I have 16 people jumping in with me this year.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm so super excited. You know?
That's
so
awesome.
I think. Yeah, and you know, every year, 23 years, Herb has donated at least $5,000-$6,000 to my fundraiser every year, mails me a letter with a check every year, and he's like, I love doing this, make sure to keep me on your list. Like, how can you ask for more than that? I mean, with all my friends at the dealership and Herb, I raise at least 10 grand every year.
Oh, that's amazing.
You know, which helps the program run. I mean, really what I try to do it for is to cover the kids' expenses to go to the Special Olympics games, which are at Harvard Stadium every year. And I think it's $100 entry fee per kid. So it tries to cover all the 90 kids to be able to go. which is fun. And if there's leftover, they can get uniforms, they get trophies. That way, no one gets left out. And, he's just so good at that. It's David. I don't know how he does it. Like, guy's a saint. Guy's an angel. Like, I don't know how he handles that. It's so many, 90 different autisms and spectrums and all these crazy things, and he just makes it work. Like, yeah. It's a special talent. It's a gift, man, because I'm only dealing people. I'm only dealing with one, and Mikey can be challenging. So to have to think about 90 different ones, you know, some are so talented, it's crazy. Like, when they do their play every year, like, these kids memorize every line, and I'm like, I couldn't do that. I'm like, he's amazing, and he's singing these songs, and I'm like, This kid could really do probably Broadway. Like, this is pretty wild right now. So, you know, each one's got their own special talent, you know.
There's actually a Broadway show going on. I saw a segment on it where all the people have autism.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it's about kids, people with autism, and they casted people with autism, and it's unbelievable. Yeah,
two or three of these kids could do that. I mean, they're that good at the play. Like, that's always the lead because they're that good, and they're like really into it. Like, they look forward to it every year. So it's actually fun. It's fun.
It's amazing.
Yeah. It's really cool. And they do. He builds these plays that he works on all year, and he writes the plays and he builds them around. So every character, kid has a part. Like, it's, I don't know how he does it, because he's a regular, he's a teacher in regular life too. So I'm like, how he fits all this in is beyond me. Special people, man.
Really special. Yeah. People.
Well, it speaks to the theme of, you know, people finding their purpose, you know, like, because it takes us particular type of person to do that. It takes a particular type of person to do what you're doing, and for a lot of people out there to, it's amazing.
Mikey's given me a whole new outlook on life as a younger kid, and I mean, I can't imagine where I'd be without him ever being in my life. And then I had a little sister who's, you know, like probably 8 or 9 years younger than me, and you know, he's so close with her because she's so good with him. I mean, it's just one of those things. I feel really lucky with the way things turned out, because I mean, he will only do certain things for her. Like, even I can't get him to do those things. It's really interesting. He's like, nope. And then Allie comes in and he's like, hey, what's up? And I'm like, little, you know, like, what the? I've been trying for an hour. And I was like, you just needed her to walk in, like, you know. So it's really cool. Like, it takes each person in the house. Like, my mom can say something and it works. I can say something and it works. Allie can say something that works, but each one of us can't get it to work without the other person. Like, it's funny how their brains work, whatever. But
so yeah. That must have taught
you. He's got a girlfriend now. They FaceTime like all day long, and
iPad, cute.
Like, chatting. Even when he's like asleep, I still see her on the iPad. I'm like, hey, he's asleep. You can, I mean, we can go to bed too, you know? And she's like, I just like watching him sleep, you know?
That's awesome.
It's cute.
That's so great.
It's cute. Yeah.
One of the themes that it's so funny, because I literally just had a conversation about this morning with a family I work with. Yeah. They were talking about BC High, how it's a big school, but they have these smaller groups. They call them houses. And the way you were describing Herb Chambers, like being such a big pool
monster
with a lot of fish swimming around doing a lot of work, that you still felt seen.
Yeah.
Right? And across everything we've talked about here today, going back, I'm using BC High as an example because I literally just had the same conversation this morning. It's wild. The point of having these smaller houses in a big school is so that every kid gets seen and feels seen and is known as an individual instead of just a big group of like, oh, you're a freshman or whatever. And what you're describing with Herb Chambers, whether it's in the service department or wherever you are, it feels like, and through your stories, that people are seen for who they are, and their individual parts of themselves get noticed, accepted, embraced to be able to do the best that they could.
Definitely. I mean, Theo, he's done, I swear, every position in that place. I mean, he's just David, the sales guy upstairs. I mean, I think he started out as like a janitor in our place.
Wow.
Then he was a receptionist at the desk. Then he was he's moved, he's done 4 or 5 positions, and now he's like one of the best sales guys in Mini. I mean, you know, and just so much respect for that move. I mean, just but to give you the option and the ability to do that,
exactly,
and not just keep you as that janitor for 16 years. I mean, just
not just,
you know,
see one person for one thing.
And you could see so much more in the kid. I'm like, this doesn't work for him. He's so good with people. He's just the sweetest guy. And I'm like, the people go, man, thank you for David. Like, he's just, he's not your typical sales guy. And I go, I know. That's why I like sending people up to him, because he's just, he's normal. You know what I mean? He's not going to sell you a car. He's going to help you buy one. And that's the difference, right?
Totally.
You don't want to be sold. Like, I came here. I like the car. I'm here because I like the car. Like, I don't need you to be like, you're going to take this one home today? Like, yeah. I always hate that move. It's like one of those things. So do we have a deal? I'm like, no, I'm good.
Yeah.
I feel slimy.
So let me say real quick, Lex, because I'm going to branch off what you just said. So, you know, you're emphasizing people being seen within this company, and I'm going to bring it back to your story. I'm going to ask you two questions. Mm-hmm. One, did you feel seen by your mom?
Oh, yeah.
And by some teachers that you said really treated you well?
Oh, yeah. No, definitely. I mean, I had some teachers that, like, you know, I just think they thought I was just like a menace because I couldn't focus enough that I'd be talking to this guy, talking to that guy, and I was just an interference in the class. And then, you know, you'd get those comments on the report card where it'd be like, you know, Mark can't pay attention in class, but he's such a nice person or something like that. You know, they'd always have a positive, but they'd always have a negative.
And my mom's call it the compliment sandwich.
Yeah. It's like, it's fine. Like, and it's fine. But my mom was always like, listen, you know, you got to like focus a little more and just stay off the radar. You know what I mean? Just stay off the radar. And it was tough for me because I had all these friends. I'd rather talk than listen to this. Cause like I said, I knew I wasn't going to do well in it.
But you did feel seen by your mom. And I'm going to also suggest that you probably also allowed your brother to feel seen too, to whatever degree he internalized that.
Oh yeah.
And people around him can see that you allowed him to feel seen as a human.
Oh man.
And I'm going to feel like, I mean, I started this episode by saying, you know, how does someone become the way you are now? Mm-hmm. And it just seems like those two aspects really supported.
No, big time. I mean, my mom, my mom was always just extremely supportive. My grandmother too. Like, so my grandparents, both of them had houses down the Cape. And in the summer, I would get to spend like 2 weeks with one and 2 weeks with another, one in New Seabury and one in Onset. You know, and I spent so much time with them, and it was the same thing with her. Like, she was very like, you can do this, you can do that. Like, I know you got it in you. Like, you just, that's who you are. Like, you're a people person, you know? So whatever happens in school isn't going to matter because you'll find your way through people. I mean, just through connections. And that was my mom's mother. And then my dad's mother was like this really crazy surgeon, super smart lady, World War II doctor, you know, kind of crazy. I got crazy stories out of her.
Wow.
But she was always like, I know you're having trouble in school, but you're just not applying yourself. And, you know, it was one of those things like, it's probably fairly true, but I mean, she was more the one that wanted me to go to college. She was the one that actually helped get me to that private Catholic school because she thought it would eventually lead to college, you know. But she wasn't mad that when I didn't go because she's like, you're doing great with work anyway. But I know the other one was like, it's not going to matter. You know, you're going to be fine no matter what. And they always made me feel like no matter how I was doing in school, like you're going to be fine in life, you know, because you're good to people and you look out for people and you take care of people. And that's what it's all about, you know. And it's like you said, building connections, building relationships. And I enjoyed that part of it. I always did. That's why, like my mom said, it's like, I know the neighbors because of you. Like I'd go introduce myself to the neighbors. I'd help the neighbors because it was like you're in the same street. You see each other every day. Why not just be friends with everybody?
Yeah.
I mean, it was simple to me. I mean, unless you gave me a reason not to, but other than that, you know, I liked it. I mean, my mom said like, there was nothing I ever taught you. She takes no credit for it. She's like, you were like four. We went to a donut shop. I have you at the counter. I'm ordering donuts. And I look around and you're gone. And I'm like, where did he go? And you're just sitting with this old guy who's reading the paper at his table. And he's just sitting there reading and you're just sitting next to him. And I grabbed him. I'm like, I'm so sorry. And they're like, no, you're just sitting down. And we got out of the donut shop and she's like, what was that all about? And he said, he looked lonely.
Oh,
you know? That's beautiful, man.
You know, she's like, I just thought it would be cool if I sat with him. You know, and she's like, I didn't
so
teach you
sweet.
That. She's like, that's just who you were.
More.
Yeah. Like, so it was like one of those things. Like, I don't remember that story. I was too young. I don't remember that.
Yeah.
Like, she told me that. I never even remember that happening.
Yeah. You that's know? Beautiful.
I was too young. But she's like, that's just kind of who you were. Like, you just loved helping people. I mean, you'd always be helping the person. And I've always tried to be that way. I mean, I'm driving home from work and I've stopped and helped somebody out of a snowbank or help jumpstart somebody's car after you've been working 12 hours. They're like, why? And I'm like, it'll come around someday to me.
Yeah.
And in my life, it's actually happened. I mean, it happened to me. I've bailed a lot of people out of situations when I had my Jeep, like pulling people off snowbanks, pulling people out of parking spots, whatever, helping them shovel, whatever. Just, and my mom's like, you stopped after 12 hours. You stopped on the side of Route 1 to help somebody. I'm like, yeah, the guy was stuck. I mean, you could tell he was stuck. I mean, why not help him out? I know I can, you know?
It's
why not? And you're like, whatever. So the come around thing, like I got stuck severely out in New Hampshire. Like I was really like, how am I going to get home? My car was stuck up to the doors. And these two kids, like 14-year-old kids, come flying out of the woods on dirt bikes. And they're like, oh man, you stuck pretty bad. And I was like, wow. Yeah. They helped me dig out my truck for like 2 hours.
Wow.
And we didn't get the truck out. They're like, we'll be right back. I'm going to get my dad. He's got this really big Wrangler. And I think you're stuck where he got stuck last week.
Get out of here.
Yeah, like he fell in a hole right here.
Oh,
and
my
I think
gosh.
You're in his hole, right? So this guy comes with his Jeep, yanks me out in like 5 minutes, follow me back to my house, get to his house. His wife comes out with like towels, cookies, like,
oh
hey guys,
gosh.
Dry off. You guys are probably soaking wet after all this, you know. And he's like, son, go get the hose. His son's under my car, hosing off all the mud, getting like cleaning my car. I'm like, you don't have to do that. You don't have to. He's like, you don't want to drive back all the way to Boston with all this mud in your suspension. You're going to destroy the car. And I'm like, guys, can I give you guys some money? Like, this, your son spent like 2 hours with me up to his waist in mud. Like,
wow.
And he's like, no, man, this is what we do up here. And he's like, you were in my hole. Like, I caused that hole. I got stuck there last week and I was off-roading. And I was like, I don't know what I was going to do. Like, I was legitimately going to try to figure out how to get home. I didn't know how I was going to. He's like, hey, man, next time, you know where I live now. He's like, come find me. We'll go out together. If one of us gets stuck, we can take care of the other one. And I was like, see, that goes around, comes around. Stuff does work sometimes, you know, because I feel like that was just me helping all those people. He just saved my day, you know? Mm-hmm. So it was cool. It was one of those stories where I felt like it did come back around.
You know? Mark, you said, you keep saying it's such a simple thing. It's such a simple thing. And
to me, it is.
Yeah, I wrote a song called There For You, and one of the lines is, sometimes the simplest thing is what's really true, like showing up for you. And I feel like you really encompassed that.
No, I mean, I don't know. I feel like it's easier to get up in the morning and like do good and help somebody than to be mean and be bad and not, you know, I mean, I would, if I can go home and know at the end of the day, I helped at least one person, like really bailed them out, or, you know, like the holidays, like somebody, I saved somebody's Christmas or somebody's Thanksgiving by fixing their car real quick that they were like going somewhere to try to get to a family event. And I'm like, I got this, don't worry.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like panicking, crying, trying to figure out how they're going to get there. And I just swoop in Superman style, save the day. And like, dude, my day is the best for the rest of the day. I don't even care what happens for the rest of the day. And that person probably will never forget that. And then that makes me feel really good. So,
yeah, you know, I mean? I'm appreciative of my sister too. She has that similar quality where she shows up for people, and it's it's a special thing you guys have.
I don't know. My word is what means the most to me. If I tell somebody I'm going to be there, I tell somebody I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. I mean, that's all you have in life is your word. So
that's right.
You know?
And sometimes the smallest things make the biggest difference.
Yeah. Agreed. Simple
that's amazing.
Things. It's simple things. It really is. Like, it's just I think it's like an old like Chinese proverb that I read when I was like younger, and it just stuck with me. But like, even something as stupid as just smiling at somebody that's having a bad day, you know, that gave me that. It's a smile is a curve that can straighten out a lot of things, you know, and I always
liked
that saying, because I was like, I mean, someone's just having a bad day and you smile and say hello and they might just have a good day now, you know?
So in psychotherapy, we try to understand the beliefs that people have that lead them to act, think, feel how they do. And I like what you just said, because I think we all need to check in with what our beliefs are that are leading us to treat people nicely or poorly. And to check in with ourselves, because if you held on to that, that's like a worldview almost. That's kind of how you view life, through that one little saying, right? And we all kind of create these beliefs that really drive us. So it's great when we can hold on to the more positive ones.
Yeah, I mean, my stepson is funny. Like, we would always ride the train in the Boston Orange Line to go to like the Bruins game or something, and you know, I don't know, just me. I don't know if I just scream, talk to me or whatever. But like, I just end up in random conversations with people on the train. And
us too.
I remember getting there and my stepson's like, do you know that guy? And I was like, no. He's like, you talk to everybody. I mean, you just talk to anybody. I said, listen, man, like, we just had a great conversation that came from nothing, just sitting on the train. And I was like, hey, man, I like your hat. You know what I mean? And the guy's like, oh, thanks, man. Yeah. And then we just end up on this 20-minute conversation. And he's like, that's crazy how you do that. It's like, no, I mean, it's just, I don't know. I think it's still crazy to this day. And maybe people think you're a weirdo sometimes these days. But like, you're walking down the sidewalk, that person sees you and just looks at the ground.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, I just want to say hello, good day, good morning, good afternoon, whatever. Like, why is that? Is this harmful? Like, it's crazy to me. It's like they think you're a creep or something. I'm like, you can barely hold the door for somebody without them thinking you have an ulterior motive now. It's like, it's kind of wild to me. And it was just always kind of how I was taught to do and what to do, hold the door, open the door, do stuff like that. But nowadays it's like, I don't know. People like avoid each other.
Yeah.
You know? Like I'd be the guy in the elevator having a conversation, but people think you're weird. It's like, you know, this guy talking to me.
Yeah.
And it's like, why is he talking to me? I'm like, I'm not hitting on you. I just thought I'd say hi. You know what I mean? Why is this a problem?
Exactly.
Like, you know? And my girl's like, you're just friendly.
Yeah.
You know, this is who you are. I mean, we end up at the Bruins game, you're talking to the neighbor that sits next to us, behind us, whatever. It's like, I don't know. I think it's more fun to be nice and make acquaintances and have fun at the game, high-fiving everybody in the section, you know?
I'm such a big fan of, like, if you think, like, oh, wow, that was really nice, or, oh, I really like that, or that's really cool, like, say it.
Yeah. No, like, I'm like, wow, I love your outfit. And they're like, thanks. So, like, thanks. I'm like, you get two different responses, like.
But that's, I think, I see that as an opportunity for connection, whether it becomes a friendship or just a moment.
Like,
I think that's so important and it builds people up so much. And to your earlier story, you know, that also is what made you a bigger fish in a big pond, right?
Yeah, I guess
because,
you could say that.
Because
yeah.
people took the time to share the compliments of how much you meant to them and how much your kindness, your care, your diligence in the way you do things mattered to them.
Yeah, I keep a stack of them at home and I haven't read them in a while, but like I keep a stack of them that Herb sent me after he got sent them.
Wow.
And I just think they're so cool to read because it's like this person met me once and they took this time out of their busy day to do this. Like this is really, you know, this is like a page. Like this isn't just a blurb.
And it's
like, and then, you know, they will send their surveys out and these surveys are just crazy. And it's just like, you know, just makes you feel so good. Like you did something right. I mean, they did this like Google review thing and I got so
many
Google.
They send too many texts sometimes, but.
Oh no, it's overkill now. The new system
Herb,
kills
a little
me.
Too like, much.
Kills me. But they did this Google review thing once that was just awesome. And these people wrote stuff like that honestly like just makes you like almost just stop, like almost want to like tear up for a second because you're like, oh my God, like, wow, I made that kind of difference. Like you don't notice it. I'm just trying to do my job and be right. But to them, it was a totally different, you know, totally different thing. I didn't look at it the way they looked at it.
There's so many different ways in which you can get your car serviced or to pick a car. But I think, you know, I was joking about the text messages. I think they're trying to actually show that people really do notice the difference that you guys make.
Yeah, no.
Because not everybody takes the time to share that. And I think it's really important
to share. I appreciate it. I do, because I know how busy people are to be able to take the time to write a survey like that or do something like that. I mean, to me, it's a lot. I mean, I always do it for the guys, you know, when I go get service too, because I know it's important.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, it's just what they say in the survey. I'm like, wow, I didn't feel like they felt that way. You know?
I think one of the things that, you know, Jerry and I were raised in this way and from our grandparents all the way down to like who we are and how we try to show up every day, thinking about like you need to see yourself in the other people that you're interacting with. And you need to see that like their presence matters just as much as yours does. And if you can take the time to pay attention and just like notice and just be kind in that moment, I think it moves mountains.
I just try to keep it away from robotic. You know, it's like, it's too much. It's just humanize it, right?
Yeah,
you know, just
totally.
Be like, if I'm so like, true. I want to be me coming in, like, and just, you know, I want that interaction, you know, people. But like with you and your mom and your family, like, I've had nothing but good times working with you guys. Like, I see you guys come in, I get happy because like, I know I'm going to have. Like a good experience because you guys are cool. Like, I mean, it's like I've always enjoyed working with you. Your mom's been the sweetest to
she's
me
the
forever.
Best.
I mean, she's just
she's
like,
unbelievable.
No matter what's wrong, she's just like sweet and happy and just whatever, you know? She's got that like calm, she's just calming. Like, I don't know. I don't know how to put it, but she's just got that tone where she's like, everything's cool, you know?
Yeah. Well, she adores you.
And I just appreciate that like approach, you know, because I'm like, you're here because your car's broken. But she's like, it's all good.
We appreciate you saying that. She's one of the people who doesn't get acknowledged as much as she should, but she's always the one that just, she is that way.
She's invited me down to the Cape House. Like, she's just the sweetest person ever, like, for her to like go out of her way to invite me. Like that stuff just touches me because I'm like, man, I'm just the service guy. You know what I mean? Like, her to do that to me, like say that to me, it's like, man, I really feel like part of the family. You know what I mean?
She truly
I know she means
that.
It. I know she means it. And she knows I love the Cape. Like, I truly miss the Cape, and like losing those two houses was extremely hard. I mean, one, you know, right near the country club, one on the private beach. Like it was, wow. it was hard. Like I loved spending those times with my grandmother, you know,
yeah.
just like one had the four houses off the beach. The other had the huge in-ground pool with the slide and the, you know, and it was like,
amazing.
That was the best. I mean, she was right near the New Seabury Country Club. And I would like, anytime it would pour, I would like sneak on the golf course and I'd go in all the ponds and I'd get all the balls.
Oh,
and
nice.
I'd like go home and clean them all up and then go back to the place and sell them to all the guys that would come to golf. Like, it was fun. I had the best time as a kid out there. And she was a wicked swimmer. Like till she was like 90, she was still swimming in the pool. And every day for the whole summer, she would try to add two laps.
Wow,
two laps,
bless her. Laps.
And she wanted to compete with me. She's like, let's go.
And maybe that's where you got it.
Yeah, I swear. I mean, she was like, let's race. And I'm like, Grammy, why don't we just do laps together? I mean, you know, we don't have to race. And she's like, you know. But yeah, I feel very blessed growing up that way and just like having those two K bosses. If I had, you know, lost one of them later in life, maybe I would have tried to hold on to one of those houses. Mm. But it is what it is. I mean, you know, it's sad but true. And all my neighbors from that original house in Onset, like they're like, if you ever want to come down and just park in the driveway – and just go to the beach. Like, we've been friends since you were 1 year old. I mean,
yeah.
Come on, like, you know.
So, Mark, I think one of the things about my mother probably, recognizing you, because she's the first one, is like, you got to meet Mark. And just the fact that you remembered me when I came in the second time, I'm like, this guy remembers me? This is awesome. I think there's something she sees in you is that, you know, you just do the right thing, whatever that is, just do the right thing. Mm. And also, you make the best out of things. And your whole story is about making the best out of things, even if it's not ideal.
Yeah, no, I mean,
and
definitely.
I think that's such a great role model that you are. I think we have to kind of wrap up the episode because we're just kind of getting to the end here.
Sorry, I can talk forever.
We could.
I love it. We could stay here forever.
I have too many stories.
We'd love to hear them.
We can spend the whole day, the whole week, the whole month with you, man. And I don't know if Alexis has some last words, but this has been so, I mean, I teared up sometimes thinking about the stuff you guys are saying.
I mean, you don't know how much it meant to me for you to ask me to be on this. Like, I mean, it just means a lot to me because, I mean, I respect both of you as people. I've always enjoyed working with you. I feel like more of a friendship than a working relationship, which is what I like with my customers. I like to look at them as more than friends than clients. I mean, that just feels better at the end of the day. And for you to ask me to come on here and talk like that and the intro you gave me, like, yeah, I felt the same way. Like, I want to tear up a little bit because, I mean, to me, it's just being recognized like that means the world to me that I'm doing the right thing, you know? So, thank you.
You mean the world to us and to many, many more. We're not the only ones, I could be sure.
Maybe we make that Cape Beach trip work with the family.
We should do it.
Hang out together. Maybe I can get to hear him play guitar or something.
That'd be awesome. That'd be awesome.
Kumbaya on the beach.
Yeah. But I think a few really quick takeaways are like, you know, first of all, you know, give neurodiversity a chance, right? Like understand that not everybody's going to want to do or even need to do the same things all the time. And that is okay.
Totally.
Right? And everybody has a path and we need to see it and support it and embrace it because there are a lot of people who might not have ended up being as successful as you if they had the similar struggles, which I know all too well.
Yeah.
And it's really difficult for people to get out of that sometimes. So thank goodness you had that support to get you where you are.
I feel really lucky with my mom, like, you know, always being like, no matter, don't worry, you'll find your way.
Yeah.
You're going to find what works for you.
Absolutely.
Like, you know what I mean? It's like,
absolutely.
And I feel like this, they're like, Mark, don't you want to like do something different than this job? Don't you want to like move up in the company or something? And I'm like, the minute I move up in the company, I lose that interaction with the customer. Like, now I'm working with the managers only. Like, I want, like, I said that straight to her, but I was like, my thing is with the people. And I was like, I want to be with the people. Like, I don't want that management role.
Yep.
I know it comes with more money. I know it, you know, whatever. But I like this part of it, you know, and I don't want to change that. Like, I won't be able to work with you guys. I won't be able to, like, you know what I mean? Like, that's the part of my job that I love every day.
Yeah.
Like, I love working.
Yeah.
Cars are getting confusing. Cars are getting crazy. I mean, now I'm trying to learn how to pair everyone's phones and do CarPlay and stuff. And I'm with these 90-year-old ladies trying to figure it out in their car.
Bless your soul.
I see the same guy, like, every month. And he's like, it lost pairing. And I was like, get in. Come on, Richard. Let's go, man.
That's, you know, awesome.
We get in that car. We're like best buds now. Like, I'm in his car once a month, helping him with the Bluetooth, getting the car. I don't know how you make that look so easy. I mean, you just do it every time. So we're on a first name basis now. You know, he'll hit the bakery first, bring me one of my favorite chocolate chip cookies from the bakery. And then he'll pop in and be like, can you help me with my phone? I was like, good to see you. Yeah.
I think he just wants to see you too.
He's the best.
That's,
you know,
awesome.
So that's those things that like just totally make my day. And if you're going to be somewhere for 10 or 11 hours, I was, might as well be having fun.
Like, that brings me to my next point.
I think my mini customers are the best. I've worked with other car brands. I feel like the mini customers are the best.
Yeah, it's
like
a pretty cool car.
They just love their
takes
cars.
A special person.
It's like different. They like take care of my baby.
Yeah.
Not fix this piece of, you know.
Yeah.
It's like take care of my baby.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's like they look at it as a member of the family. Like,
it's
different approach to cars, which I just enjoy.
I love it. The second thing I was going to say is that other theme that came up, I think, across your stories, Herb Chambers, and also thinking about Mikey's path and journey too, is that, you know, even if there are smaller fish in a bigger sea, like every one of those fish matters.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so important to recognize and to appreciate every single one in every single way. So, and then the last thing is like really simple, right? Simple, but for some reason so hard. Be kind and do the right thing.
Yeah.
Because oftentimes that comes right back to you.
Well, it's like that do unto others as you'd have done to you. It's a very simple like philosophy, but I just don't know why it's falling off the wayside now. I don't know if it's the way the world's been the past few years or whatnot, but it's like I said, with the people, I'm walking to work in the morning, 6:30, 45 in the morning, and people stare at me and then look at the ground and I'm like, I just wanted to say good morning.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. If we need to get back to just being friendly again and just being close. I mean, I think the world would be a better place. I mean, I don't know.
We're with you, man. And this is our thank you message for all that you do. And we're so grateful for you.
It means a lot to have me.
So this
me
is
on
our
you.
Letter
Thank you guys
to
so
you.
Much for having me. Yeah.
We're
I
so
appreciate
grateful.
It. Yeah. Thank you.
Mark.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks for tuning in to the Reed Connected podcast. Please remember that this is a podcast intended to educate and share ideas, but it is not a substitute for professional care that may be beneficial to you at different points of your life. If you are in need of support, please contact your primary care physician, local hospital, educational institution, or support staff at your place of employment to seek out referrals for what may be most helpful for you. Ideas shared here have been shaped by many years of training, incredible mentors, research, theory, evidence-based practices, and our work with individuals over the years, but it's not intended to represent opinions of those we work with or who we are affiliated with. The Reconnected podcast is hosted by siblings Alexis Reed and Dr. Gerald Reed. Original music is written and recorded by Gerald Reed. Editing and recording was done by Cybersound Studios. If you want to follow along on this journey with us, the Reconnected podcast will be releasing new episodes every 2 weeks each season. So please subscribe for updates and notifications. Feel free to also follow us on Instagram at Reed Connected Podcast. That's Reed Connect Ed Podcast, and Twitter at Reed Connect Ed. We are grateful for you joining us and look forward to future episodes. In the meanwhile, be curious, be open, and be well.